In the meantime, just to make the announcement, that those people who haven't been enlightened yet, you might as well stay up all night, waste the time going to bed, this is our last chance. For those already enlightened, you can have a nice rest this evening. Now I'll have a nice rest. So here we go, we do the chanting. So what do we do to start the chanting? You notice that when you cough and people laugh, people don't tend to get sick? But it's fun. So here we go. Wait for it. That first thing about meditation is learning how to be patient. So just wait for things to happen. Alright? Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddham Bhagavanta Abhivade Surakato Bhagavata Dhammo Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangham Namami Namo Tassa Bhagavato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Buddham Saranam Gacchami Dhammam Saranam Gacchami Sangham Saranam Gacchami Dutiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami Dutiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami Dutiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami Tatiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami Tatiyampi Saranam Gacchami Tatiyampi Sangham Saranam Gacchami Iti Viso Bhagava Arahant Sama Sambuddho Vicha Charana Sampanno Sugato Loka Vidu Arutaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Sattā deva manu sāna purdo bhagavāti Svākāso bhagavāta dhammo Sandhītiko ahāriko ehipāsiko Opanayiko Pachata Vedithaho Vinyuhiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Pujupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Bhagavato Savakasangho Yadikam Chakari Pura
yugani ata purisa pugala esa bhagavato savaka sango ahuneyo ahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anusaram punya ketam lokasati.
And now we have the Metta Sutta in English. Here it comes.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let him be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not busy with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do thus like a sin, that the wise would readily prove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So lives a harmless heart, should one cherish a living being, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sex desires, is now born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, okay, so we have heaps of questions to get through tonight. So sit comfortably and we will begin with question number one. Is a complicated nimitta good or bad? Good, bad? Who knows? This is a nimitta, isn't it? So it's good. No matter what you're doing,
I'd always tell you it's not just good, it's very good. Even if you spent the last 8 or 9, how many days we've been, I forget, the last 7 or 8 days sleeping all the time. Very good. That's not your fault. There's no one in here, as I said this morning, there's no will, there's no being in there, so who's to blame? Anatta, no responsibility. Yeah. That's why I say that any complaints, go and see Heng Kim or Angie or Shirley, any compliments, come and see me. I don't take any responsibility. So it's still very good. Complicated images are still very good. Complicated images is when you see scenery, faces, stuff like that. So there's more than one thing going on there. That's complicated. So try and keep it simple. And somebody did ask me that question in the interview time. What do you do to turn a complicated imitator into a simple one? It's look for the most beautiful part of that imitator. I remember once seeing the scenery with the lakes and trees. And there was one tree which had one dewdrop on its tip, on the tip of one of the leaves. It sparkled. So I immediately focused on the sparkle, and the sparkle became a beautiful imitator. Or if he's seeing some jewellery, look at this wonderful diamond, or it may be just a glass diamond. Somebody might have a glass eye, just look at the glass eye, see it sparkle, and then that sparkle turns into something beautiful. So you just focus on the most beautiful part. And the most beautiful part is you turn it into a really nice imitator, if you've got a complicated imitator. Dear Your Emptiness, please convey our thanks to Angie, Eching, Shirley, and all those who made this retreat such a memorable one. What do you mean memorable? First of all, you can't believe it. So, a round of 3 starters for Angie, Eching, and Shirley. Sorry!
Sorry! Sorry!
Now, forget it. Next question. Thank you. That's good. Who are you saying thanks to? Is it me? What is this me you're saying thank you to? Is it my belly? So because I see the sign of compassion, because when I come up here, all those other people are overweight, you don't feel so bad? When your teacher is overweight too? That's really hard saying slim. It's really hard, you can't eat what you want, you have to exercise, you can't do this, you can't do that. Sort of compassion for us. Well, it's all right for Ajahn Brahm, that's all right for me. Very good. Statue, yes. My teacher, Ajahn Chah, he was fat. And the great, the happy Buddha is always fat. So I'm just keeping tradition. Dear Your Emptiness, Ajahn Brahm, thank you so much for sacrificing your peaceful time to teach us for so many days. You have such a big sacrifice. Oh, you don't know how much I have to sacrifice to do for us. It was really tough. I really need a lot of sympathy. Am I going to get any?
No.
That was a pleasure. May you never be reborn. That means I can't come back and teach again. Who's going to take over? You can. Okay, very good. It's nice thing. May never be reborn. I don't know which way to take that. They're trying to get rid of me. There you go. You spoke about being a visitor this morning. How do you become a visitor? I am not in control of the instance of marriage and relationships. And how does one use meditation to achieve this? It's easy. Next time you meet your wife, imagine her as your mistress. And then you'll love her much more passionately. And next time you see your husband is over 60, imagine him as Toy Boy. And then you'll be so nice to him. So he's not my husband, he's my toy boy. He's not my wife, she's my little mistress. And then you play around like that. How much? Does that work? I know I'm interfacing, I'm getting into big trouble here, but nevertheless. In marriage relationship, how does one use meditation to achieve this? Yeah, the one thing in a marriage or a relationship, don't own your partner. I don't know how many times that, especially young people, they come up and they feel smothered by their boyfriend or by their girlfriend. The girlfriend or the boyfriend is so afraid the relationship might fall apart that sometimes they tend to worry so much, they control, they always want to be with you, they never give you any free time, because they smother you. You know what it feels like. And that's because of fear. fear and control always go together. So we're not afraid of what you do, I let you do whatever you want. I'm not afraid that you won't meditate, you've come here all this way, of course you'll meditate, you're all highly motivated, you do as much meditation as you possibly can. But go for it, I'm happy to control you. The same if you're afraid that your partner may be cheating on the side, that fear will make you try and control them. And when you try and control them, they get so upset at you, then they will get somebody on the side, because they're unhappy with you. So never trust in the relationships means you, you know, you can let each other be. And trust in your meditation, to let go, no fear, and then you don't control meditation, just flow very smoothly. So that's by being a visitor. You just trust that you don't control. And then it goes really, really well. The other thing is, when you're a visitor, you know it's not going to last forever. Relationships don't last forever. Either get divorced or end up in a box for the crematorium. It's true, actually, you can't argue with that. It's not going to last forever. So even a relationship is a temporary one. Even if you've been married for 40, 50, 60 years, it's all temporary. So when it's really temporary, you know the relationship's not going to last forever. That means you take better care of it. You're only a visitor. But oh, lovely Sibylle, Ajahn Chah will pick up the glass. He say, can you see the crack in this glass? Can you see the crack in this glass? Can you? He said, there is one there, but it's microscopic. And one day, someone will drop this glass, or they'll kick it as they get up to do some bowing or whatever, and this glass will break. The invisible crack will get wider, and this will be destroyed. He said, because of the crackiness, it's called impermanence, it's called fragile. That's why I have to care for this glass. But if this glass was made out of plastic, in other words, unbreakable, had no cracks in it at all, I could kick it, throw it, I wouldn't need to care for it, because it would last forever. But because it's fragile, that's why we have to care. If you think your relationship's going to be there forever, like plastic, you don't need to care for it. When you realize that one day, either you know the relationship is going to just fall apart, or one of you is going to die, when you know it's fragile, that means you care. When you know you're only a visitor with this person, you know the day is not going to be forever. That's why every one of them is important. That's why you care. So in a relationship, remember, it's not going to be forever. And the happy day you have today, it goes very quickly. So please enjoy the moment with your partner, with your lover, with your friend. It goes too quick. But you care for every moment. That's how we act as a visitor. Dear Ajahn Brahm, can the deaf, blind or mute gain wisdom? Which one are you? All three. They don't seem to have the cause to precipitate wisdom. Your wisdom on this matter, thank you. The trouble is, if they're mute, deaf and blind, they can't tell you how wise they are. Who knows, the deaf people, they may be so wise, they just can't teach you. So at least, as they're deaf, if they're mute, at least they can't break the fourth precept. That's one good thing. Now if they're deaf, blind or mute, a lot of times people have got one disability, but it's very rare having all three. Maybe deaf and mute, but if a person is, this is interesting, just an aside here, if they are deaf and they're blind and they're mute, they actually usually die. And the reason is because they can't really express themselves in the world. The body is here for our five senses. The body is here for our senses to explore and play and find pleasure in the world. The body is a vehicle. The five senses aren't here for the body. The body is here for the five senses. So if the five senses aren't working, you die. There's no reason to sustain the body. It's one of the four conditions for the maintenance and support of the body. Contact, which means sensory experience. So the deaf, the blind, don't have that sensory experience. So straight away, their engagement in this thing we call life is diminished. However, if someone is just blind, or someone is just deaf, or someone just, well actually those are the main ones, if they've had pangolinic sense of smell, that's not a big one. for any sense of taste, that's not a big one either. Especially blind and deaf, they're very, very important. If you've just got one of those gods, I've only got four senses rather than five, you know what happens? One of the other senses becomes more acute. In other words, that part of the brain usually sort of taken up with hearing is now sort of free to go into seeing. So you can actually see more deeper, or you can actually feel more deeper. So people who have got some disability in one of those senses usually compensate in another sense. And I always remember this. This is one of the stories about wisdom and compassion, which I read in an article, and I think I put in the Opening the Door of Your Heart as one of the stories. There was a young boy born deaf, really deaf. And he was taken, obviously, to the doctor for a regular checkup, and one just regular, ordinary checkup. The doctor told the parents that he just read in a medical journal a new procedure had been developed, and they found about 10% of kids, you know, with this hearing disability were cured with this simple procedure. And the doctor said, it's very simple, it's not really painful, but you know, maybe general anaesthetic, that's all. Do you want to try that out for your kid? So there's only 10% chance of success. They said, well, why not? Who knows, you know, it might work for our kid. And so they gave the operation for that kid, and he was one of those 10%. After the operation, he could hear again. And that kid was so angry and upset. He said to his parents, why didn't you ask me, first of all, whether I wanted to hear? He said, this is such an awful noise. I was much happier not having that sense disturbing me. And he actually said in this interview, if you wanted to help me, give me another hand. Because that's how he was experiencing the world, through his sense of touch, even much more than his sense of sight. He's incredibly sensitive in the sense of touch. He said, I didn't want to hear. And you assumed that hearing was good. When I heard that, I realized that sometimes you really think you're helping somebody, and you're not. And of course, he never heard that conversation because he was deaf. If he'd have heard it, he would say, no, 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 leave me alone. I'm quite happy as I am. But sometimes we want to change people. We want to change them. We think it's better to be like us. And actually, they're more happy as they were. So ask them first of all. So, deaf, blind, usually I think you probably pass away if you're both. But if you're one, not the other, usually the other senses become very acute, compensate, and usually get very wise. Dear Ajahn, when a human dies, they will rebirth or become ghosts. Can a ghost die? If yes, what do they become? That's interesting, isn't it? What happens to ghosts? If they die, you know, do they actually die slowly? And they have ghost doctors who try to revive them, who give them CGR, you know. Stop trying to achieve a ghost, trying to revive them. Do they have hospitals for ghosts, do you think? I often wonder that about ghosts. I mean, what do actually ghosts fall in love and get married? Now they're girl ghosts and boy ghosts, and sometimes one of the boy ghosts passes by and says, wow, that female ghost, she's really hot. And they go out together at ghost nightclubs and stuff. And what do they eat? Because apparently they only come out at night time, so where do they go during the day? It's really weird, isn't it? Because they usually only come out in the daytime. Do they go into their graves at night during the daytime? They've got to get up there back into the cemetery before it's dawn so they can go and sleep again. Where do they go at night? Or during the daytime, I wonder. There's lots of interesting questions you can ask ghosts. And are there such things as ghost dogs and cats as well? Well, can there be? Because sometimes the dogs die, what happens to them? Can they get reborn as ghosts? And if there are ghosts, are there ghost dogs? People ask that question. When you go to heaven, can you take your cat and dog with you? Because people really love their cats and dogs. So, you know, it would be a lot of suffering if you can't share the happiness of heaven with your dog or your cat. Apparently, according to the Christian tradition, you can't. Because I heard about this, and I think I was one of the monks in Melbourne just last May that you were talking about this. You know that there was a crazy American pastor who said, first of all, the world was going to end in April. When it didn't, he postponed it to October last year. You remember that? And there was one really sharp guy in the United States. Now, if I had a hat, I'd take my hat off to this guy. he started a company. Because according to that Christian tradition, this is now the evangelical Christian tradition, not the good Christians, but you know, the crazy ones. And some of them are really good, some of those. But anyway, they believe that sometime in October last year, they would have the rapture, which means all the believers suddenly, sort of, they would disappear and all their clothes would be on the ground. And they would be taken up naked into heaven. But they could take their cats and dogs with them. And this enterprising man said, look, I am an atheist. If you look on my blog, my website, I'm a confirmed atheist. You know I'm not going to go to heaven. And you know that your dogs and cats, the ones you really love, they won't go up there. So who's going to feed them when you go? I will feed them for $1,000 per cat or per dog. And I've got a whole group of other atheists. You know, this is, they can prove that they are atheists, so you Christians know for sure they're not going to go to heaven, and we'll look after your cats and dogs for you. Because many of these people, they're a bit sort of silly, but they were very kind. And so they wondered what would happen to their pet dog, their little Rover, little sort of Tiddles, the cat, you know, when sort of going to be passed away. So they signed up for this. Of course, there's no money back if the rapture didn't happen, because these people were totally convinced the end of the world would be last October. So this guy made a killing on it. He made millions on this, of the stupid people, all signed up to look after their cats or dogs. I really was disappointed that the Buddhist Fellowship never saw that, and offered to help all of the evangelicals in Singapore, because they know in their rapture, the Buddhist Fellowship, you Buddhists have no chance of going up to heaven, so you can stay in Singapore to look after people's pets and dogs. Good idea, eh? For $1,000 sing a cat or dog. Well, there's another end of the world going here, but I think people have seen that, so they won't do it again. He's the first guy who got the idea. Good on them. Made a fortune. So when a human dies, they'll be reborn or become a ghost. Yes. Can a ghost die? Of course a ghost can die. It just passes away and passes on to a new realm. So that's why if you see a ghost and you really have lots of energy, just say, come on, I'll give you some good karma. Remember, you're good karma as well, ghost. And let go of the ghost realm. And get a nice human realm where you're going to have that. You can do that with a bit of help. Now, I'm a monk, I've got connections, I can sort of fix it for you. So that's what they can become. There's this, my story of the dog ghost. This was a story from one of my disciples, very beautiful story. This Australian woman, maybe in her 50s, and I don't know if she'd had a relationship or got divorced or, you know, never married or the husband died, but she lived alone. Yeah, she was quite well off and she had a nice dog. The dog was the companion. You know, that many people, they love their dog, they love their cat like a human being, and they're so close to them, so much so, that many times you have to give grief counselling to people who've lost their dog or cat. I mean, they really are suffering, as if they'd lost a son or a daughter. And anyway, she lost her dog. Oh, first of all, just a few days before she lost her dog, she was taking the dog for a walk in the park, through a forested wooded part of this park, and when she got halfway home, she realized she'd lost her fingering. It wasn't very expensive, but it was an heirloom. Someone important had given it to her. And so she immediately retraced her steps, trying to find her lost fingering. But it was in a forest. She can't find it. She tried to look for an hour or two with her dog, couldn't find it at all. And anyway, a few days later, the dog died from natural causes. And afterwards, she told me this story, she said, afterwards I heard my dog barking around the house. Now, it's my dog, I know its bark. Now, if you live with a dog for so many years, you know your sound of your dog's bark is totally different than any other dog's bark. She said, I heard it many times, and so many times I tried to see it. I could hear it in the room, I opened the door and there's nothing there. And he said, but one day, I heard the dog barking outside the front door of the house. And I happened to be just on the other side of the door. So I quickly opened it to try and see the dog. There's nothing there. Except, in the middle of the welcome mat, right in the middle, was her ring. The ghost dog had found her figure. Oh, is the ghost dragged? You must see the people through here. What are you doing taking the picture of the ghost mark? The quite old. Why are you coming close? Okay, here we go. So that's the ghost dogs. And maybe cats as well. So I don't know if there's any other ghost dogs or cats, but that's a beautiful one, because the dog found her in for her and brought her back. She'd been in and out of the house a long time, but suddenly, whoop whoop, and on the other side of the house, the other side of the door, was her fingering, she must. The dog found it for her. Weird, but it's quite cute, quite lovely. When do we do more meditation as a beginner? When we do more meditation as a beginner, do we have more dreams? This last 8 days, I've had weird dreams. Dreams of monsters and unnatural death of friends and family members. Thanks. Really, thanks? Don't you like your family members? Maybe you might inherit something if they all die. No. Seriously. Now, sometimes what happens is when you meditate, your mind gets more energy. So, one thing, you don't need to sleep so much, and if you do sleep, maybe it'll be light because you're energized. Basically, nature, you don't need to rest so much. But sometimes you have weird dreams, maybe it's usually what you go to bed with. Now, if you go to bed with feeling negative or feeling tired or feeling a bit sick, then you may have weird dreams. But if you go to bed and do a little bit of loving kindness before you go to bed, then you don't have weird dreams. You have beautiful dreams. So my advice to you is when you go to bed tonight, you know, you're sleeping in your bed, you lay down, get your hand and stroke your hair and say, good night, me. Have a wonderful sleep tonight. No monsters, no family death. I love you very much. See you in the morning. Me. Give yourself a bit of kindness. You give yourself a bit of kindness in the morning before you go to sleep. You don't have bad dreams. Just like the last thought before you die determines your rebirth. Give you your last thoughts before you go to sleep determine the type of dreams you have, if any. So see if you can do that. Or, if that doesn't work, you need a bit of money, just get a lottery ticket, maybe an old one, it doesn't matter, just before you go to sleep, look at the lottery ticket and a number, then close your eyes. Then you think of lottery numbers, please. No, don't try that, I'm only joking. I'm really careful sometimes, I make my jokes and people take them seriously. But that one about stroking your head, that's good, that works. Dear Ajahn, when I meditate, the limiters, lights that appear are usually blocked, just like you see in eclipse. Block lights were what I have. Is there anything wrong with my meditation? No, I just leave it alone. And after a while, from the middle of that sort of a dark spot, usually a beautiful, first of all, a little pin light will usually come out of that dark spot and it'll be grown to really nice limiters. You're getting limiters, the beginning of them. But just carry on, they'll soon develop by themselves. That's no worries, that's just part of the course. Dear Ajahn Brahm, what do I do when I tend to feel anxious and have irrational fears? Thank you for your kindness and great compassion. Actually, somebody, I asked them to ask this question because they asked about anxiety but I didn't have time in the interviews. So, this was that story of a lady, she was in Adelaide, who had such great anxiety that she was bedridden. She was doing a dentistry degree in Adelaide University. She'd been to the GP, she'd been to the psychologist on campus and they could not help her, and she got so bad she couldn't even get out of her bed. She was so terrified. Fortunately, she had a boyfriend who cooked and cleaned for her, but she was not getting any better. They'd been in bed for 6 weeks or so, I forget how much, but roughly that time. And her big advantage, her stroke of good fortune, her uncle was a strong supporter of mine. So the uncle said, go and ring Ajahn Brahm. So she gave me a call, and she said her uncle told me first of all what was wrong with her. She had an incredible, powerful anxiety attack, so bad she was in her bedridden. And still a very young girl. And so I asked her, this is how to get rid of anxiety. I said, when you have a panic attack, when you feel that anxiety, where do you feel it in your body? Because every emotion has a corresponding bodily feeling. And she said, I don't know. I said, give me a call in 3 days when you can tell me. I gave her something to do. Taking control over her therapy is a psychologically wonderful thing to do. So 3 days later or 4 days later, she called me up and said, yeah, whenever I have an anxiety attack, I feel it just above my breast, you know, just in this chest area. I said, great, what does it feel like? She said, I don't know. She said, give me a call in 3 days when you can describe it to me. Now I was giving her a test in mindfulness. So she had to be aware of this feeling and be able to know it so well she could describe it to somebody else over the phone. 3 or 4 days later she called again and she gave a very good description of the feeling when she had anxiety disorder. Now, I didn't tell her this, but I made her establish mindfulness of the bodily part of that emotional disorder. I said, right, now what I want you to do is to give it some kindness. I never said that. I told her to take your own hand and massage it. Massage it with as much tenderness and love as you possibly can. If you feel you can't do that, get your boyfriend to do that. That's what boyfriends are there for. So then give me a call in 3 or 4 days. So she was following the instructions. 3 or 4 days later, she called again and said, did you do it? I said, yes. And what happened when your boyfriend or yourself massaged that area during a panic attack? He said, oh, the feeling in the chest disappeared. You know, because that's what happens when you massage. You relax all the muscles over there, so the feeling in the chest disappeared. And then I said, what happened to your anxiety at that time? And that's when she paused. But the wonderful pause is when you realize people are getting the message. He said, the anxiety disappeared as well. I said, exactly. Now you know how to overcome the anxiety. Don't try and deal with it on an emotional level, because basically you're out of control emotionally. But the emotional anxiety, it does have a physical counterpart. You know that feeling now, you've been mindful enough of it. Now add that kindness by massaging it very softly. And you find when the physical counterpart of anxiety is eased, the cause of it, the emotion, will also go as well. And so never needed to phone me again. About a couple of weeks later, she was out of bed, back to university. She got her first class with honours at Adelaide University. She's just finished doing this incredibly hard to enter course in some part of dentistry in Sydney. 1,000 people applied, only 3 got in, she was one of them. And a couple of years ago, she married that boyfriend and I did the ceremony for her. A nice romantic sort of ending. Happy ever after. That's wonderful. They come and see me every now and again because basically I saved her life. Literally. And that's how it works. They get anxiety or fear. You go to an interview, you're having to perform an examination, or you know, you're getting married or something and you're really, really scared. Where is that manifest in your body? What does it feel like? Massage it so much that the whole feeling sort of disappears and then you find the anxiety is gone as well. So if you're going to some interview for a new job, that's how you do it. Very simple, highly effective. And every time I teach that to psychologists, they get out of their notebooks and write it all down. They would never give me any sort of credit for it or any sort of reward for the patent. But I don't care, a lot of people are getting rid of anxiety. Dear Ajahn Brahm, thank you for being the soft and cuddly, and may I add, wise mind. How isn't that nice? Soft and cuddly and wise. But please don't cuddle me, otherwise someone takes a photo and I'm in big trouble. Actually, I don't know if I told you the story, but you have to be very careful as a monk. And this actually happened, it was so lucky that no one had a camera. This is true stories. I was teaching in the prison in the town of Bunbury, to the south of Perth, and it was an evening session. That's the only time they'd let me in, and the only time I could get down there was the afternoon train. So I had about 2 or 3 hours to spare. So you know, Australia's got these beautiful beaches and they're mostly deserted, so I went down to the beach to meditate for a couple of hours. Really nice meditation. Just meditated there by myself, totally empty beach. And you know, when you get into deep meditation, you can't hear sounds around you. So when I opened my eyes, finished the meditation, it was so peaceful. I noticed there was someone sitting on my left. And someone sitting on my right as well. And these were two 17-year-old, you could only describe them as hot chicks, in bikinis. You know, one with long blonde hair and the other one with long black hair, or whatever. Sitting right next to me. And I looked at them, what do you want? Oh, we've been waiting for you. We've been sitting here while we saw you meditating. We want to ask you some questions about Buddhism and about meditation. It was perfectly innocent. What had happened? It was the last day of the university entrance examinations in Western Australia. They called it the TEE over there, tertiary entrance examinations. And they just finished their last exam that afternoon. And of course, the last exam, into your bathers, down to the beach, party. And I got heaps of parties later on, but they saw me, and it was really interesting. I'd never seen them much, no brown road, sitting so still, so they really genuinely wanted to ask questions. So I answered a few questions. I looked around to make sure there was no cameras at the time. Imagine you took a camera, Ajahn Brahm, with a beautiful blonde 17-year-old in a bikini on his left hand, and I had one in the right hand. I would never, ever be able to explain that. Never. It was innocent. And you get yourself in those troubles, so I don't really care. That happens. So it's really interesting to life. But anyway. No, it's been a long time ago, before Facebook. Before these mobile phones which can take a photograph of anything. In those days, they had those real cameras. But still, it was a very close scene. You can imagine how I feel. Ah! I didn't do anything. Anyway, thank you for being the sovereign kind of like wise man. By the way, when can you stop being silent? Not that it's repressing me or anything like it. Thank you. When you die. Be the silent sage. You know, it really impresses people when you just stand there without saying anything. They think, wow, that's so deep. If they ask you a question, you should say to them, "He who knows doesn't say. She who says doesn't know." Wow, that's deep. And that way you can get away with anything in life. When your boss at work asks you a question, you say, "She who knows doesn't say. She who says doesn't know." The boss will think, wow. Or well, they'll probably sack you. Now, I don't know, when's the right time? You want to start speaking tomorrow? Or lunch time? Not for me, I don't know. Yeah, I know that. Okay, whenever you want to. Thank you for an insightful retreat and being a wonderful mentor who has helped me understand and overcome my doubts, fear and lack of confidence in meditation, even though I have not made much progress. No. I will continue to persevere with your words in my mind. Have a safe trip back. Do I have to? I refuse to follow orders. No, it's not exciting having a safe trip. I can't have an exciting trip back. Yeah, life is very boring as a man. Nothing much happens except two ladies in bikinis on either side. Now we'll have a safe trip. Dear Ajahn, during meditation when I try to do nothing and relax, the mind seems to be just dark and no brightness, so we need to brighten up or just be with it. What you can do, another little trick, if you're doing nothing, being still and peaceful, nothing as much is happening, put your attention on your face, mindfulness of your face, especially the lower part of your face, and move the corners of your mouth up. Make a smile. If you can't make one, fake one. Because as soon as you smile, straight away your mind gets happy. Now that's a trick which I developed. Sometimes I was getting onto the breath, and the breath was really peaceful, but the delightful breath wasn't happening. And what I needed was just a little spark of happiness. And how I did it was just there, the bird going in nice and peaceful, and I stopped looking at the bird, looked at my mouth, smiled. And straight away the mind became happy. I can't sustain that happiness by smiling a lot. It only works for about a second or two. But that was enough to start seeing the breath as beautiful. And then divide the breath to cover. So it's really nice to be able to smile through your meditation. Just take one. And that gives the brightness and the joy to the mind. And then it's not dark anymore. It lights up. It's just an easy thing to do. And you know, if you want to actually maintain that smile, see if you can get some tape, and it's going to take the corner out of the thing. And then you can make it so you're constantly smiling. Actually, is it wrong to feel so discouraged? Don't talk about being an arahat. The mentor also seems to take eons with method. That's what happens when you start talking about the psychic powers, and nimittas, and jhanas, and enlightenment, to be able to fly through the air, and so I can't even watch my breath. Even I've been looking for the present moment all week and I still haven't found the present moment. And sometimes you feel so discouraged. I'm hopeless. I'm terrible. This actually happened. This is one of the stories I like telling at the end of the retreat. There was a nun, a bhikkhuni, who'd been a bhikkhuni for 7 years. And throughout those 7 years, she hadn't had a moment of peace of mind. Always restless or fast asleep. She could never meditate. And after 7 years, you know, you might have been here for a few days. It is 7 years. Imagine how discouraged she would be. She said, I don't want to disrobe. I don't want to go to husbands and house life again. But I was wasted time staying as a nun because I can't meditate. There's only one choice. So she got a length of rope. She went into the forest. She climbed a tree. And she tied one end of the rope to a stout branch and the other end of the rope to her neck. And was just about to jump off when her mind became peaceful. She had her first deep meditation. That was cutting things very fine. But that's a true story. She told that in her poems of the enlightened nuns in the time of the Buddha. And you ask, why did that happen? It was because she gave up and she let go. That's why she had her deep meditation. So any of you have had a deep meditation? No, don't do that. You get this deep trouble. But anyway, if you try, if you can't meditate, there's no way you can do that either. You make a mistake again. So, the point of that story, why she told us, is that she was trying so hard to meditate. And in the end, 7 years, trying, getting nowhere. So what's the point? She just gave up. She let go. She stopped trying. That's when you get peaceful. Here's another of my stories I haven't said yet. One of my favourite similes of the donkey and the jury. When I tell this story in Australia, it's the donkey and the carrot. But in Singapore, you don't really like carrots that much, but durians. Yes, especially this time of the evening. Can you think of a durian right now? Oh, you're really hungry. Oh, I can smell, I can taste, I can really taste it. I know what it's like. I just close my eyes. So I can talk to you. But anyway, donkeys, they will not follow orders. You hit them with a stick and they still won't move. But instead of hitting with a stick, you tie the stick to their neck. So the upper end of the stick is about 2 feet in front of their head. On the end of the stick you tie a string, and on the end of the string you put a piece of durian. And imagine, the donkey sees the durian. The large durian, the donkey comes from Malaysia, comes from Penang. And so the donkey moves towards the jury. But because the donkey moves, the stick moves, the string moves, and so does the jury move. So it keeps running after the jury, no matter how fast it runs, the jury is always 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. Can never catch the jury. That way you get the donkey to move and you don't have to waste so many juries. But on one occasion the donkey was parked outside a talk when Ajahn Brahm was giving the lecture. And the donkey heard how to catch the jury. And it's very simple. The donkey runs like hell after that jury. It's been doing that a long time, but the faster it runs, still the chewing is going at the same speed. But what the donkey hears from one of these talks is how to stop and let go. He stops chasing the chewing. He just stops and stands still. That wonderful word, still. What happens to the chewing? It swings further away. That's what happens when you first let go. You fall asleep, you get restless. You may have meditated before, following the breath. You've never been so restless or sleepy before when you stop and let go. But soon the durian is 4 foot in front of the donkey's mouth. It's swinging away. And then it stops. And then what happens next? You're always running ahead of you, of me. It starts swinging towards the donkey. And soon that durian is 2 foot in front of the donkey's mouth where it normally is, but now is coming at great speed towards the donkey's mouth. And all the donkey does not do anything, just remains still, and just has to remember it's not just stillness, it's also compassion. Just at the right moment, the donkey says, "The door of my mouth is open to the durian." And the durian gets in, and that's how the donkey catches the durian. Remember, you've been running, you've all been running long enough. You stop. Durian swings up, down, into your mouth. Thank you very much. That's how you get into the driver's enlightenment. So it's really easy when you know how to stop. You know how to run. Now you learn how to stop. And you don't get discouraged anymore. Once you get the trick, everything happens, and it's so easy. Wow! Just as the Buddha said, that's how it happens. Next question coming up, I can open it. Dear Ajahn Brahm, the empty junk eater, can you describe? Oh, dear Ajahn Brahm, the junk eater. I don't eat junk. I eat healthy baked beans. Baked beans, I read in an article that baked beans, I love those for breakfast. That was way up there in the healthy foods next to broccoli and next door, because it's full of antioxidants, lots of tomatoes. That's actually very good for you. Can you describe each of the four jhanas in detail and explain the differences? Thank you. Of course I can. That's the answer to that question. Ask, can I? Any of you want to? It's in that book, for goodness sake. Basically, the difference is the different quality of the bliss. Just like you have different ice creams, they're all ice cream, but there's vanilla ice cream, there's strawberry ice cream, there's chocolate ice cream, and there's double chocolate ice cream. I forget what other ones they have, but anyway, that's enough for now. So they're all ice cream, but they've got different flavour. And it's the same with the jhanas, they're all bliss, but different flavours of ecstasy. And the more you go deeper, the more subtle and delicious is the ecstasy. Which is, if you ever experience first jhana, you think, wow, this is the ultimate, you can't get more bliss than this. And then when you enter a second jhana, wow, this is so much more delightful. The first jhana is a totally different type of ecstasy. And when the third jhana went, wow, this is even more delightful. You never knew there were so many pleasures available. And all more profound, all more deep, thousand times better than the one which went before. That's why you really have fun with these guys, and the fourth guy is so still. That is so delightful. Just like a person who's never had fine food before. When you actually get fine food, wow, I never knew something to be so delicious. Those are jhanas. Different flavors of bliss. When we do body awareness, it is simultaneous to doing present moment awareness. It seems impossible to do body awareness and yet still be thinking. Yeah, almost. If you really do body awareness very accurately, you're just aware of a feeling in the body. But a lot of times when a person does have a feeling in the body, then you start thinking about it and giving a commentary about it. But one nice thing with the feelings in the body, there's so many of them, they come one after the other, they don't really give much space to giving a commentary. If you're giving a commentary, you're missing what's happening next. I sometimes remember when I used to listen to fine music. One of my favourite was this composer Monteverdi. I don't know why, but I really love that stuff. But anyway, if you're listening to fine music in a concert hall, can you give a running commentary to your partner? Say, I know this is a really good part of Bach. This is the place where he does his fugue, and blah, blah, blah. If you started talking to your partner, what would your partner do, the people sitting around you, if you started talking during a concert? They'd tell you, shut up, get out. You're not allowed to have a commentary when you listen to fine music. And in fact, if you notice, you don't think why you listen to fine music, because the notes, the chords follow on after each other so quickly, it doesn't give you time to think. It fills up all the space in your mind. Now that could be the same with feelings in the body. They could totally fill up your mind, leaving no space for a commentary. Or you do the Om Mani Padme Hum, totally filling up the mind, there's no space for thinking. Or full awareness of the breath. The very beginning of the in-breath, the end of the in-breath, beginning of the out-breath, the end of the out-breath. Totally filling up the mind so there's no space for anything else. That's what it does. So if you do body awareness really deeply, yeah, I agree with you. But a lot of people don't do it to the full extent, and they allow spaces for thoughts to come up. Dear priceless emptiness. That's really good. I like that people invent new words to fuck. Your nothingness was very good. The price of emptiness. That's really interesting. Your junk food emptiness, I didn't really like that much. It might be true. After the morning meditation, after your talks, I do not feel like talking. Silencing of the mouth and feeling tranquil and blissful. Great. Inner joy keeps flowing from heart area. Please comment. Well done. That's what's supposed to happen. After morning meditation, you're told you don't feel like talking. And silence of the mouth and feeling tranquil and blissful. Brilliant! That's what you're supposed to be feeling. Well done. And inner joy keeps flowing from the heart area. Yeah, carry on. No problems. But you probably wanted it again in the afternoon, never got it. I understand why. Dear Ajahn Brahm, is drawing and sketching breaking the eight precepts? It depends what you're drawing. If you're drawing pictures of the fat monks, then that is breaking the precepts because that's right. No, it's not. As long as you're not sort of, doing it too much. Bit of recreation, never mind. I suppose if you're drawing pictures of people with little balloons and they're speaking, I suppose that's breaking the precepts. I remember getting this card, which I actually, it's like a monk's card. You know, one is for cartoons. I had these two monks in one of these Benedictine or Christian monasteries. And one of those monks had a little ventriloquist dummy, and he was summoned to the abbot's office. He said, "No, you can't get out of your vow of silence that way, Brother Timothy," or whatever. So you can keep quiet and get a ventriloquist dummy. And so you can talk to people using the ventriloquist dummy. But you're not talking, the dummy's talking. So that's not a way of doing it. So keep quiet. Can people who get jhana become enlightened when they read sutta or listen to Dharma talk, not during meditation? Yes, that's what happens. Nati jhana panya, sa panya nati jayato, yami jhana japanya cha sa way nirvana sati. Okay, verse 372 of Dharma Pada. Which means there's no jhana without wisdom, there's no wisdom without jhana, but when there's jhana and wisdom, you are in the presence of Nirvana. So that Christ. So people ask me, it's a very good comment. People like Devadatta, he had jhanas, but he never became enlightened. He tried to kill the Buddha for goodness sake. So that proves you get jhanas, you're not always enlightened. True. But if you don't get jhanas, you don't get enlightened. We need the other cause, jhanas and wisdom. Jhanas is like the match, wisdom is like the gunpowder. When those two come together, boom! And you're enlightened. If you've only got the gunpowder, you've only got all the teachings of the Buddha and wisdom, you don't get enlightened. If you've only got jhanas but no wisdom, you don't get enlightened. But when those two come together, the jhanas and the wisdom, boom. So you need both. But people are just so well learned these days. There's so much information about Buddhism, so much information overload. The wisdom is easy to come by, the jhanas is the thing which people don't have. Now, heaps of gunpowder, but no match. Dear your dear emptiness, this morning's meditation before lunch was mind blowing, to say the least. Roughly 50 minutes into it, I felt an overwhelming feeling of joy. It was like I was inside a tundra storm of rolling black clouds with lightning lights. I felt I was going to burst into laughter. At this point, I felt a little scared and wanted you to say, take 3 breaths and come back. I stumbled into a sedated state and something, having to sit down in the toilet to gather some composure. During lunch, I wanted to swim in my soup. Thank you. Oh, great with water. Did you have a go swimming in your soup? That's what he said. I'm going to read that properly. Anyway, sounds good. Great, swim in my soup. So great. And you had some nice experiences. Brilliant. Enjoy it. Never be afraid though. Just go for it. See if it goes deeper. Forget about your lunch. If you get into a jhana, I should have said this on 8 precepts. If you get into a jhana and you miss your lunch, I will get someone to buy you dinner. So, you know, you can break your precepts because you missed your lunch because you were tired. Dear Ajahn, my spouse had encountered a near-death incident last year, and now I'm living in fear that he may die before me whenever he is ill. Is there any way to meditation, any other way to lessen or overcome this fear? Thanks very much. One way to overcome the fear of your spouse dying before you is to check how much you're going to inherit in the will. And then go with you, hey, I'm going to be rich when that guy dies. Oh, forget about it. Just because they had a near-death experience, it's probably had a near-death experience and they're probably told it's not your time to die. So you can ask your husband, your spouse, when did they say you're going to die? How many more years have you got left, did they tell you? And then you actually know where you are. So no, don't live with fear you may die. What fear is you looking for the future with lots of negativity. Look, he survived one death experience. Then his name is probably sort of like a cat, has 9 lives. So that's only one point. You've got another 8 to go before he dies. So it's very easy. It's like that story of the cat who died in my monastery. The cat had 9 lives, but got hit by a truck with 10 wheels. Shall I say that again? The cat had 9 lives, but got hit by a truck with 10 wheels. 1, 2, 3, okay. It's not a good Buddhist joke, especially if you're a vegetarian. I do apologize. But it's very funny. Anyhow, you're most compassionate. I can take that away now. Awakened enlightened emptiness, but maybe I got so compassionate when I tell a joke about poor cats. My question is, what the precepts and their causal link to meditation? I consciously stick to 5 precepts in every everyday life. Not killing living beings, for example mosquitoes, not telling untruths, faithful to my father, no alcohol or intoxicants, not taking what is not given either. But my meditation is still all over the place, and my nimittas, if they can be called that, are more like and torchlight shining on my eyelids and the moon on a clear night. It's still very good. Are some peace has more causally linked to meditation qualities than others? Also, I tend to sleepwalk. Once I even woke up in the middle of night having sex. No hand taken alcohol or drugs. You woke up in the middle of having sex. That couldn't have been very good sex. I woke up with a bit of having sex. Oh, okay, now you're sleepwalking. And I said, that was with your partner. No, it's someone else. And I did take alcohol or drugs. My dreams also tend to be very vivid and vivid, sometimes illicit. How do I keep one's pieces? I'm consciously too. I'm okay when I'm awake. It's because my pieces were broken when I'm subconscious from my meditations, like milky tea instead of clear water. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. No, it's, you know, when you stick to the five pieces of what you're doing, that's really, really good. You've got nimitters, and they haven't grown yet. That's nothing to do with the precepts. Just a bit more wisdom, a bit more skill in meditation, and you will get there. As far as sleepwalking is concerned, I don't know too much about sleepwalking. But if you want to avoid the problems in sleepwalking, you can condition your mindfulness before you go to sleep at night. You may tell yourself, I will stay in my bed, I will stay in my bed, I will stay in my bed. Basically, you're giving instructions to the mind, so when you get in that state where you usually sleepwalk, you stay in your bed. And you won't sort of do things you would rather not do. So you can program your mindfulness, give yourself that conditioning. Basically, you know, self-hypnosis, self-conditioning, to tell yourself, I will not do these things, I will not do these things, I will not do these things. And that way you'll find that affects your grief and you don't do those things which cause you problems afterwards. But basically, if there's no intention there, it's no bad karma, it doesn't affect your meditation at all. So basically, you're clear. Dear Ajahn Brahm, during retreat, is it necessary to be mindful of all activities from the time we wake up to the time we go to sleep? Would this help one lead to faster and deeper meditation? It's so hard to be mindful all the time. Exactly. So this is one of the reasons why it's much better to relax more. I know all these people who try to be mindful of every activity, so much stress and so much control, they never get peaceful at all. So I wouldn't try that at all. Let the mindfulness grow naturally. If you go for stillness, the mindfulness gets strong, you get superpower mindfulness, and then your mindfulness suddenly thinks naturally rather than forcing it. But don't force it for things like, keep it natural. So the mindfulness of all activities comes at its own time. You don't force it, you don't make it happen. Can one get jhana when doing walking, lying down, meditation, walking, no stillness, and lying down, too relaxed to go to sleep? You can get jhanas when lying down meditation, but you've got to lie down in the position you don't usually go to sleep in. And jhanas when walking, I never thought that was possible, but someone said there's a monk here in Thailand who could do that, and they know he can do that. Because he's got all these cuts and bruises on his face. Because if you get into jhana when you're walking, you don't know how to stop. So you bump into things. So it's not recommended. If you're someone who does get jhanas while doing walking meditation, please buy a crash helmet and other stuff which will protect you when you walk over a cliff. What is the difference between jhanas and nimittas? Nimittas come first, jhanas come afterwards. How do we know which stage of jhanas we are in? By reflecting afterwards what it was like, and you soon get enough experience of the jhanas, you can actually look and see what the Buddha said, there's different types of bliss. You can actually understand what those different types of bliss are, and also give you huge amounts of insights. Dear Ajahn Brahm, there's so many interesting Buddhist articles on the internet these days, blogs about this room to show that Ajahn, Zen Tibetan Buddhism, good Buddhist films to watch, and I'm guilty of happy spending too much time on these. That very often I have no time to meditate. How do I filter what is appropriate material worth spending time on? It's much better spending time on your own mind than actually just seeing other people's minds. It's like Ajahn Chah used to say that when you have your lunch or your dinner, you have the main course first and then you eat the sweets. So all of the reading, seeing the movies, going on the blogs, that's like the sweets. They can add sweets as long as you have the main course, which is your practice. So you actually keep the precepts and you do the meditation. And then the sweets are like the reading and seeing all these things afterwards. But if all you eat is sweets, you're not going to be very healthy. So you can balance the amount of practice with the amount of study. The study is said with the sweets. The practice, that's the main course. When my breath disappears, I panic and then try to locate my breath. How can I let go? Well, you're going to die anyway, so you might as well get it over and done with. So if your breath disappears, say, yes, bring it on. I want to die. And then, so you're not panicking anymore. Or you can remember what I keep on saying to you, that it does not matter, your lungs know how to breathe, they've done it for so many years. Ask yourself how old you are. If it's been doing it for so long, it's going to carry on doing it. You're not going to die now. You haven't got my permission. Anyone who's a disciple of mine, before you die, you have to ask my permission, first of all. Otherwise, it's very, very disrespectful. I tell people that when I'm on my 3-month retreat, you know, which is coming up soon, the range retreat, the Pants of the West, I say, during this retreat, you must not die because it's such a disturbance for me to come off my retreat and go to your funeral. So out of respect, please don't die for 3 months, okay? And actually, people are pretty good. They usually behave. So you haven't got permission to die on this retreat because it caused so much difficulty and it would disturb, you know, my rest. So no, please don't do it out of respect for me, okay? Don't be disrespectful. So in other words, that, you know, you don't die. So if you stop breathing, don't panic. Just leave it alone. You mentioned the true meaning of life is realized once a meditator achieves jhana states. Please elaborate. That's the simile of the tadpole. The tadpole is the water, so he knows the real meaning of water. Dear Venerable Sir, you mentioned certain people can do astral travel. What part of the body being travels? Mind, energy, spirit. It is a stream of consciousness that six steps creates this mind-made body, which is your vehicle for travelling outside your real body. So your real body is a six step or lies there. And your mind-made body creates this other body. That mind-made body is also the body for ghosts as well. Could you please explain the difference in each jhana? Done that? How does one know if he or she is a stream winner? It's very hard to know if you're a stream winner, but it's certainly easy to know that you're not. Next question. For people who get jhana, does enlightenment happen only during jhana state of meditation? Does enlightenment happen during meditation? No, it happens after jhanas, not during the jhanas. The jhanas become the cause, and then afterwards, boom. Vyaja Brahm, when you visit the higher or lower realms, how do the beings look like? Are they as depicted in the viewer's illustrations in Buddhist monasteries or books? How do you communicate with these beings by thoughts or sign language? When I go into the higher realms, the beings, they all have these uniforms on. The ones which I mostly see in the higher realms have a bit of split skirts, and I think the senior ones are in red, and I think green for the next level, and the normal ones are in blue. You understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's Singapore Airlines, the flight attendants. That's when there's always a couple with caps on in the higher realms. When I go to the lower realms, they're usually very dirty, and they usually have a little hat on with a light on the front. You know what I'm talking about. The mines in Western Australia, those are the people who inhabit the lower realms, the miners. So that's what the lower realms look like and the higher realms look like. Do that, that's what the higher realms. One last question and we go to the toilet break. The mouth was, the meditation. Dear Ajahn, can you share your wisdom on when to let things be and when to take action? Someone I know is working in an unethical way. Ooh. Using their position to manipulate and use others for their own personal gain. Ooh. When I see others being hurt and abused, should I take action and speak to the person who's being unethical? If there's something you can do, then do it. But a lot of times there's nothing you can do. So when there's nothing you can do, you just have to let it be and let karma take its course. As soon as someone's doing unethical, they usually get into trouble sooner or later. So if there's something to do, then do it. if there's nothing to do, then bide your time. Wait. Also, if you're going to take action, sometimes you have to see, are you capable of taking action? How's it going to affect you? Have you got enough strength, enough time? Even our finances. If you're a whistleblower, sometimes you know you get into big trouble, like that Julian Assange. So be very careful. Know your limitations. Know what you're capable of. You know, just going back to that, the ordination. Before I did that, I really thought, have I got the strength and power to understand what's going to come? And I said, well, actually, I told some of my friends. I said, I could do this. Not many other monks could do this because I've got enough power to do this. I can get away with it. Other people won't be able to do that, they will buckle under pressure. So know your limitations. If you're going to make a stand on some ethical cause, sometimes you're not strong enough. You just haven't got the strength. So you just have to let it go. Even though it's painful for others, you can't do anything. It's a very sad thing sometimes to do that. Sometimes you have to know your limitations. But if you can do something, then don't be scared, do it. That's the last question in the basket. The basket is now empty. So, now's the time to empty your bladders. If there's nothing in there, you don't need to go. But if there's something to do, then do it. And come back afterwards for some meditation.